a very happy Easter to you. I'd be glad if we could have just a few moments of your time before you head off for the seaside of the country. But if you can't wait, have a good time.
The proudest color in the Easter parade on the avenue. Fifth Avenue. The photographers will snap us, and you'll find that you're in the rose of Roma.
You know, it's just occurred to me that the modern versions of the rotogravure sometimes paint a sad picture. Race riots, alphabet bombs, disasters at home and abroad. But there are bright spots, too. News, maybe, of the growth of our industrial arm. For instance, down at Shannon the other day, we handed the microphone over to Arthur Quinlan, who talked with two men from the land of sunshine and cherry blossom, who brought a lot of work to the Limerick area. Reiji Suzuki and Chio Kitagawa, who started a big Japanese transistor radio factory at Shannon.
Mr. Kitagawa, you are secretary of the Sony Company.
Sony Limited.
Sony Limited. And for what purpose have you come to Shannon?
To manufacture a transistor radio.
Transistor radio. Your company already manufacture these in Japan?
Not our company. Sony Corporation has manufactured in Japan.
Oh, yes. Of course, you are an Irish-Japanese company now in Ireland.
Yes.
With some Irish directors.
Yes.
And some Japanese directors.
Yes.
Yes. And when do you start production?
Coming June.
It's June. And how many people do you expect to employ?
I think about 100 people.
Irish people?
Yes.
All Irish people?
Yes, all over Irish people.
Men or women?
Half a men and half a women.
Yes. I see. And how many of these transistor radios do you plan on manufacturing?
At first, 5,000 per month.
And then perhaps more.
I think so.
Yes. And Mr. Suzuki,
yes?
You are the assistant secretary here, this company, is it?
Well, actually not the assistant.
Not exactly assistant, but you're one of the two gentlemen, the first. Yeah. You are the first of your people to come over here to this country. What's been your reaction to coming over here? How have you found the country?
Well, I like it very much, and especially for this mild weather. But the trouble is the too much rain.
Well, we find that too. Do you find it's, how does it compare with Japan? You say it's very mild here?
Oh, yes. In the winter, it is very mild, but in the summer, it is also very, not so hot as Japan. So generally, we can say it is mild.
What about our Irish food?
Well, I like it very much. And we have similar dishes we call Western dishes even in Japan.
What about sport? Have you seen any of our Irish sporting fixtures?
Yes, we have almost every kind of sport. But football and rugby is not so popular in Japan. The most popular game in Japan is baseball, and our original game is judo.
Judo.
And sumo.
And what?
Sumo.
What is that?
Oh, it's kind of wrestling.
Last piece of music is the kind of thing that will be echoing and re-echoing through the streets of Nina in a few weeks' time, when the town runs its first Kothas Kyothori Aaron Fla Kyo. But here's Joe O'Connor of Nina to give you some idea of the amount of sheer hard slogging that goes into the organization of a fla.
We're doing very well at the moment. We have numerous meetings under the chairmanship of Monsignor Hamilton, who is very enthusiastic, and I might say that all the members of the committee are cooperating in every possible way.
Yes, you have a very very tightly knit system of subcommittees and specialists in various lines.
Yes, we have. We found it necessary that so many activities to be catered for, that we found it necessary that to give each particular member of the committee a particular job to do. And under that system, we find that we leave every job to one man.
Yes, yes. It means that everybody must be very much on their toes, though.
Well, each member has his own job to do, and if he falls or fails in that job, well, the committee has to come down on him for...
Yes, exactly. But this kind of job, organising a fly, it's a long-term one, and it usually takes, many months. But you're tackling it in something like 3 or 4 months.
Yes, it's quite new to us in Nina. We only have... this year was the first year that we formed a branch of the Kyotas in Nina. And this is the first time that we've had a fly kyol held in Nina. But it's quite a new affair to the committee. But perhaps the enthusiasm that they're displaying will prove a success.
Yes, it should make up for any lack of experience in running these things.
I think so.
Yes. Mm-hmm. When is it to be held?
The 9th and 10th of June, of July.
Of July, yes. And you expect traditional fiddlers and chanters and all,
yes,
from all over the area?
We have 25 competitions, and we... expect quite a number of competitors. Most of the competitions are open to all Ireland.
Well, now, Joe, let's have a sort of personal slant on this whole thing. It means an awful lot of hard work for you and your other committee members. Why do you get into it, and is it all worthwhile?
Anything that helps to promote anything that's culture or traditional music, anyone that has a liking or a love for traditional music will always lend a hand to any organisation that are doing anything to revive it. And we thought that the fly kyol was one of the events that would help to revive traditional music and give the people of Nina an event of a festival of music for 2 days in a lifetime. From the enthusiasm shown by the members of the committee and the public in general who have come and offered their premises and their houses and their halls at our disposal, we feel that it will really be something worthwhile. And
would you say that from what you've seen, that this revival of interest in Irish music is helping to make people forget about Elvis Presley and Lonnie Donegan, that's, you know, the sort of rock and rollers?
Perhaps it will eventually. If we can revive the traditional music sufficiently. I don't see why anyone would prefer to hear Elvis Presley to some of our own traditional Irish music.
Tomorrow night in Nina's new hall, the FLA fundraisers will have such notables as Sean O'Sheacone and his wife, Deirdre Flynn, the harpist who's just back from a US tour, Mike Nolan, and others who should provide a good night's amusement, and a few more pounds towards the new FLA's funds. This National Music introduces a report in which P.P. O'Reilly looks back on Easter week 1916.
This is the week of the Rising. 44 years ago, this old building, the General Post Office, was the core of an action that was to sweep aside a way of life. Like it or leave it, everything changed after that week, as Yeats saw, changed utterly. Along these corridors marched young men, the brave and the timid. Below this studio, in the concourse where now a stone Cuchulainn remembers, unknown men tossed their names into the whirlpool of history. Names like McDermott and Plunkett, Clark and Collins, O'Rahilly and Pierce. Be green upon their graves, O happy spring, for they were young and eager who are dead. Pierce, who died as a soldier, had lived as a poet, a patriot, a lawyer, and a teacher. As a teacher, he would surely have wanted the schools and colleges of Ireland to remember not merely the Phoenix of 1916, but other men and other days in our long story. Today, I report to you on such a place. Clongowes Wood College is in the heart of well-wooded North Kildare. Through its grounds runs the Pale, and even the buildings suggest in their castellated solidity a thought of Norman days. Part indeed is very old. High up in one of the wings is the college museum, and it was there I spoke to Father Rector.
Well, Father, have you many valuable items in this museum?
Yes, we have some very valuable items. We have an old Irish crozier, which is reputed to date from about the 11th or 12th centuries, and we also have some very valuable manuscripts.
What would you say was the most valuable of those manuscripts?
The most valuable one probably is a book of laws which was written in Fountains Abbey in Yorkshire about 1150.
How did it get to Ireland, do you know, Father?
Well, unfortunately, we have no indication of that whatever.
I turned to the glass case whose contents had brought me to Clongowes.
Now, Father, this hat here, whose hat is that?
Yes, that is the hat of Padraic Pearse. And it is, we have the authentication here that actually it was the hat which he wore just before his execution.
There is an authentication for many of the items in this case relating to the Easter Rising. And this one says, Dear Michael, I am sure you will be anxious to have a souvenir or memento of the rebellion, and I'm therefore sending you the hat worn by poor Mr. P.H. Pearse. It was taken off his head and this morning by Warrant Officer Wright and handed to me as he was led out to his execution. And then there is another authentication from the Dublin Metropolitan Police, Kilmainham Station, dated the 20th of May, 1916. Dear Mr. Floyd, according to promise, I have obtained for you a souvenir of the rebellion. It's the hat worn by Mr. P.H. Pearse, the Commandant of the Irish Republican Army. Enclosed, you will find a letter which I received with it from my fiancée. This epistle will prove in future days how the memento has passed into your hands. Yours faithfully, Constable M.J. Hannon. Well, that's pretty substantial, isn't it?
It is. I think that's quite genuine.
The hat, which Father Lawton showed me, was of the same pattern as an Australian army hat, with the left flap buttoned to the side of the crown. And it's now faded, almost to an off-white, but a smudge of deep green remains of the original dye.
Now, Father, I believe Father Frewen is the curator of this museum.
Yes.
Well, Father, what do you think is another interesting relic of 1916?
Could I draw your attention to something here, which is the Provisional Government's proclamation of the Irish Republic to the people of Ireland.
Oh, indeed. Is that an original?
That's one of the... It's an original one. I think there are only two others in the country, as far as I know, originals. Yes. There are many copies, of course.
Yes, yes.
And this original document was picked up on O'Connell Street on the 30th of April, 1916.
That's just after the
Rising. That had been the Sunday, I think, just after the Rising.
In the glass case were historical photographs of the period 1916 to 21, and many authenticated signatures, including one by Arthur Griffith on the fly leaf of a copy of his own book, The Resurrection of Hungary. I then turned to Father Rector.
The 1916 collection, of course, is only a small part of the College Museum, isn't it, Father?
Yes, that's true. We have here exhibits going right back to the Stone Age, the Bronze Age, and the Early Iron Age. In Ireland, and also right up through the penal times to the rebellion of 1798 and 1848.
Away now from the museum and the recollections of former days, in another room wait the school choir, and vibrant young voices sing.
Oh,
Easter is also a big time for the GAA, and for a few words on this very subject, here is John Ross.
Troubles, they say, seldom come singly. And the same holds good for the kind of stories that we meet on our travels round the countryside. We go out on one road and we find a story about a man growing a peculiar and new kind of crop. And then we come back on another road, maybe 80 or 100 miles away, and we meet a man doing exactly the same thing. Well, this week, as far as I was concerned, the common factor was GAA football. Early in the week, going through the town of Ballymore, the village of Ballymore, near Mullingar in County Westmeath, I heard about a new GAA park, which has been laid out by cooperative effort by the people of the area. It'll be officially opened sometime in June, around Corpus Christi is the target at the moment. Anyhow, here's Tommy Rooney of Ballymore, who is the undersecretary of the local club.
We started about last September, October. We started in the evenings, first of all, and we got great response altogether from the local people. Mm-hmm.
Well, what did the club do for our playing pitch up to now?
Well, we had a pitch out the country about a mile outside the town.
Not a good one?
Well, it was very good, all right, but it was a bit far out, and I decided we thought we'd get something near to hand. And
you felt that the club was getting on so well it needed a proper...
Well, it was. We got into a great run of success for the last few years, all right. The club came to the top, and we decided we'd do something about the park. So, we started on this.
I know. Well, why did you pick on this particular site?
Well, it seemed to be no man's land, of course, in the beginning, and Mr. Kelly owned the land, and we got it from him on a lease of 99 years.
Well, that should last out our time, what?
Well, it should definitely last out our time, all right.
And there was no no particular difficulty put by any of the local people?
No, they were very good. They give us every help out, and we got great response altogether from the day we started until this present day. We got great help from the local people with tractors and trailers and all the rest, right. All voluntary help.
Yeah. What will the whole job cost?
Well, at the moment we have spent about, I suppose I'd say around £400 on it, with seeding and getting some labour that we had to pay and putting down palings and wiring us, etc.
And before that you had to drain a portion of it?
We had, yes. Well, didn't know that until we had the seed down and we saw the water was laying on it, got waterlogged, and we had to decide then to drain it, drained into the lake.
Will you have pavilions or any kind of stand equipment?
Yes, at the moment we have the blocks and all there to build two pavilions.
Hundreds of people worked at this project, which included building a quarter of a mile of road, much of it through deep swamp. On opening day, it'll be a proud day for Ballymore GAA Club. And now, up to Killeshandra County Cavan. When the name of Cavan is mentioned, it means good football. The boys in blue are one of the big names in the game. The game has been in a bad way up there for the last 25 years, but now they're in the middle of an astonishing revival. The other night I spoke with Pat Fair, who helped Cavan win the first All-Ireland in 33 and another in 35. Now, Pat is a close relation of two great stars from County Cavan, Conor John Joe Riley and Lieutenant Colonel J.P. Murphy, and I asked him what he thought of the present team.
Well, they're young and we expect great things from them in a year or so, if we can keep them in the country.
Is that a problem?
Well, it is. Sure, the youth of the country is leaving, unfortunately, and we're going to try to keep them in it. Give them something to do anyway. Give them a good, healthy exercise, pastime, and I can't see anything better than Gaelic football for the youngsters.
Well, do all you old All-Ireland football stars, do you sponsor the new players? Do you try to keep them in the country by actually giving them jobs? And
yes, as far as we can, we try and get jobs for them and do all we can to keep them in it.
I know. Well, now, you are not by any means an old man. In fact, I'd say you were a scare, a little bit of around middle age, although you tell me you were playing football so many years ago.
I'm no longer a young fella.
I understand that Cavan footballers live until they have to be practically shoveled under the earth. Is that right?
Well, there's seven of the team, the old team that started here over 70 years. There's seven of that team alive yet.
Walking around
yes,
as large
walking
as life
around
in the streets
as
of
large as life, and some of them working on farms.
Other old-timers I talked with were Jimmy Murphy and Des Benson, and representing the present-day team is Captain John P. Murphy. The feeling up there is that Killeshandra, which had a glorious past 70 years ago, and a not-so-glorious recent past, will have a very fine tomorrow.
And for our final report on this programme, we go down to John O'Sullivan in Cork, reports on the opening today of the Festival of Cork.
And down here in Cork, the weather is absolutely glorious. Yesterday was a day of continuous sunshine from early morning to late evening, with scarcely a breeze to disturb the few lazy clouds coming in from the west. Today it's even finer, and the city looks resplendent, like some old Italian town, nestling comfortably, perhaps, amid all the signs of burgeoning spring. Birdsong in suburban parks, and cherry blossoms transforming drab, grey streets into pleasant, fresh promenades. A perfect stimulus for the hundreds of people who have come to watch this Easter parade and the ceremonial opening of the 1960 Toastal and Festival of Cork. I'm speaking from a window overlooking the industrial parade route, and in a few moments the leading trade displays will be passing underneath me. This year, the parade is led by the Hounds of the Duhalla Hunt under the master Captain Freeman Jackson. Just before the parade began, I had a few words with Captain Jackson. Captain Freeman Jackson, how old is the Duhalla Hunt?
Well, I believe it's one of the oldest packs in Ireland. I think it's well over 200 years old. It's been through various stages in that time, but it's never been disbanded and it's been kept going for better or worse, mainly for better, I think.
Do you anticipate any difficulty going through the streets with all the crowds and the bands and everything?
Well, it's a slightly unusual thing to do, but we're very proud indeed to be asked to do this. And we hope that the hounds will behave themselves and our horses, and that nothing unusual will happen. Of course, there'll be a lot of noise, bands and one thing and another, and so it is always a bit of a chance whether your hounds will not take off with you. However, we don't anticipate any trouble.
Now, the parade, unlike a lot of parades, started actually on time, and we've seen very fine, ingenious displays. Some people have taken the advantage to do a bit of well-organized publicity. And when the colorful parade concluded at the City Hall, Mr. Michael Hilliard, Minister for Posts and Telegraphs, in declaring the festival opened, laid particular emphasis on local endeavor in promoting tourism.
Local effort and local thought is developing the tourist side of this area, can open up new sources of wealth, new sources of employment, and at the same time help the manufacturing industry in arousing interest in the goods produced here. Toastal Corky is a good example of such local effort, and Cork has a hard-working and a capable team on its Toastal Council, and an excellent record of voluntary effort. They have done more, probably, than any other centre in the country to establish firmly the concept of Toastal, and its organisers deserve the fullest support from the citizens and the municipal groups of this city. I extend the warmest greetings to the visitors who will come here and be here during the festival. Our other visitors will not mind if I offer to our kinspeople, our fellow Celts from Wales, a very special welcome. It gives me the greatest pleasure, on behalf of the government, to declare open Toastal Corky for 1960.
Stirring Sun brings us to the end of this week's news roundup. Until next time, this is Carl Jones saying goodbye and God bless.